as a topic like talk about tonight, which is really, on the one hand, it's nogeya in a kind of a roundabout way to this week's parasha and next week's parasha, which is a cool trick because it shouldn't be shaykh to any parasha because really it's a minig, and it's a minig that is a rather late minig that you don't find in the Gemara, you only find later, and yet if you're creative enough you can find the connections to it in both this week's parasha and next week's parasha. And that is the minig that exists for a chassan and a kala, let's say, to fast on the day of their wedding. And it's always interesting to talk about minhagim because it's fascinating to watch how they develop along the patterns of dinim. That the assumption is that Klal Yisrael has a halachic intuition, that the behavior that they undertake on their own, in the cases where it's validated and encouraged by poskim, usually, or I guess always, seem to manifest certain halachic principles. And it's always kedai to take a look and see how that works out. So in this case, it's a minig that's a little more localized. The Ramah quotes such a practice, that the chassan and kala fast on the day of their chuppah. And some of the svarim point out that this is not a minig that you find everywhere. As the Steichamid, the Birkei Yosef talks about, and the Ravaji Yosef notes in his tshuvas that this is really not a Sephardi custom. This is a custom that only the Ashkenazim have. So it's a custom which is somewhat limited in scope, but nonetheless, certainly among those who do come from the communities where this is practiced, it's a minig that's taken very seriously. And so within the Ashkenazi circles, for example, where this is observed, so you find a number of tshuvas which assert that this is a tainus that's not to be taken lightly, and that even though there are days when we don't fast, if the day of the chuppah is a day when it's not appropriate to fast, so then the practice seems to be to not have a fast, although we'll talk about that a little bit more. But it's background music. But nonetheless, it is taken very seriously and not to be dealt with lightly. So, for example, I guess apparently the 11th day of Tevis was a popular day for chassanas. It's coming up in a little while. Because there are a number of tshuvas, or Moshe Feinstein and Shuvas Shraga HaMeir and others, talk about the question, what if you're getting married on the 11th of Tevis? So should you fast 2 days in a row, 10th of Tevis and 11th of Tevis? And the consensus seems to be pretty clearly that you should, that you shouldn't wimp out, so to speak, and say, well, I just fasted yesterday, I can't fast 2 days in a row. This is a minig to be taken seriously. And therefore, even if it means somewhat of a hardship, you're going to fast 2 days in a row, it's still appropriate. Now you might say, but we don't assume, for example, on Yom Kippur, that we should say Sveika de Yoma and fast 2 days in a row, because that's a Sakanas Tefashis. So the post comes to say again, don't wimp out, that's different. And then if you're going to fast 2 days in Kippur, you're going to be fasting for 48 straight hours. If you're going to fast the 10th and the 11th of Tevis, so you're going to eat at night. And let's not even mention that it's the winter time, so the day is short anyway, so it's not such a burden. Muslims do much more than that during Ramadan. So this is not something to be mevatel. You should take the fast seriously, and even if it's a little bit of unusual circumstances, it's kedai to uphold this fast. So what I'd like to look at a little bit, probably relatively briefly, is what's the source, what's the idea, what's this fast meant to represent? So if you look in the Sefer, in the Perish Beis Shmuel, on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch and the Eben Ezer, and it's also discussed in the Magen Avraham on the side of the page of the Archaim, so they quote from the Maharam Mintz two reasons for this fast. And the reasons are very different from each other, really very different types of reasons. The first reason is a more spiritual type of reason, and that's one that connects to the Kriyas HaTorah in coming weeks, that our great-great-great-great-great granduncle Esav gets married, as the Torah tells us, and we're told twice about his wife. In one place, she's called Basmas, and in another place, she's called Machalas. So Rashi quotes from Chazal, what's Pshat? These two different women, what's her name? So Rashi explains that really her name was Basmas. So why is she called Machalas? In order to convey the point that a chassan who gets married receives a mechilas avonos, that his averus are forgiven. And this is a parallel to other ideas we find in the Shas Bavli, where the Gemara says that certain people get forgiven for all their sins, ha'ola gedula, parnasot tzibur. Chassan is a theme that people who take on responsibilities, maybe they're part of the explanation, are released from their averus. So if that's the case, so then it seems to be that there's an understanding that this is comparable to, let's say, a personal Yom Kippur. So you fast on Yom Kippur, you should fast on Erev Yom Kippur as well. So it requires some analysis to understand how comparable to Yom Kippur is it. What exactly are we talking about? Yes, sir?
Wouldn't we fast on the day of the wedding, not the day before?
So that's, it depends, actually. We'll talk about that. So you'll see how it may depend a little bit how it plays out. But although I don't, so far it's not yet a problem. Let's see how it plays out. So this idea requires a little discussion. First of all, is this automatic? Some of the Svarim talk about, you know, the famous Gemara in Kedusha, and it's quoted all the time in El, one of the key sources about tshuva. I'm sure you're familiar. Somebody says to a woman, Harei amikudeshesli, almanasha ani tzadik, I'm going to marry you on the condition that I happen to be a tzadik. So the Gemara says, even if he was a Rasha Gomer, even if he was clearly nobody's definition of a tzaddik, we have to worry that at least it's a Safek Kedushin, that there's a possibility the Kedushin are good. Why might it be good if he's clearly not a tzaddik? And the Gemara says, Shama hir her b'tshuva. Perhaps he had thoughts of tshuva and the situation was reversed. So that source, again, is quoted all the time in Elul because it's very powerful in describing what it takes to turn from a Rasha to a Tzaddik, and here a Tshuva, it's an important source as far as Tshuva is concerned. But some discuss, I have a sefer called Chesvas Yotzer, who talks about this, that why do I need this whole scenario? Oh, that maybe he did Tshuva, maybe he didn't do Tshuva, but he gets an automatic Mechilas Avonis anyway. So if you get married, you get this automatic Mechilas Avonis, so for sure he's a Tzaddik. So there's some discussion how to work it in with the Gemara. Maybe it's only Minas Suin, maybe it's only certain types of tshuva, maybe it's only certain types of situations. There's a little bit of back and forth about that. But the easiest way out of it, besides the fact that you get into a fancy Gita V'yadam B'Gekecha kind of situation, that you know the Kedushin has to be Chal in order for him to get the Mechilas Avonos, and it's only going to be Chal if he's a Tzaddik. So besides that whole spin that you could get yourself caught in, but the easiest way to approach this issue and not have to worry about that Gemara is that it's not magic, it's not automatic, it's not that as soon as you get married you necessarily lose all your averus, but that this is an opportunity, that this is a chance for you to get a kapara savonos, and if you take advantage of it properly, so then it is going to have that effect. So otherwise, the truth is, as some of the Svarim point out, I think there's a tshuva about this in the Torah Sikusio, that if you're going to say that it's automatic, so then why should we fast? We should party. And taka, we do party, but only after we fast. So if it means you get an automatic out of jail free card, so then what do I need to fast for? So presumably our relationship to this day is that it's an opportunity for tshuva, that it's a time when if we choose to take advantage and to step up to the plate, there'll be a mechilas avonos. So the truth is, it's a little bit of a discussion. There are different approaches as to why it is that there should be a mechilas ha'avonos. You know, some understand, Maral has this language that you're not a complete person until you get married, and once you get married, then you take on a whole new identity. So if you're a new person, so for Shetzach, you should get a new lease on life. Others connected to this idea that whenever you go up a level and more responsibility, so then there is kind of a reset button together with that. The Ksav Sofer and his Chiddush of the Chumash, I think he says that the idea is that the Gemara says, particularly in the area of Arayas, that a person who is married is protected, and when he's not married, so he's not so protected. He doesn't have anything to address the Yetzirah. So let's say he has whatever Averis in that area in the past, so once he gets married, so it's his way of saying, okay, now I'm going to protect myself, so to speak. So therefore, that's a commitment to a better life, but that itself could be effective as bringing about kapara. So there are different theories as to what it is. Some understand it also as just a broad concept of one who does a mitzvah, or especially a mitzvah that's involved in Yishuv HaOlam. That itself merits kapara. Different theories as to what it is that brings about this kapara. But it probably makes sense that it's not necessarily automatic, but like the Taurus Sikusia was saying, that it's an opportunity, and therefore you fast in order to capitalize on the opportunity and to make sure that you actually realize those kaparas that you can get together with it. So that is our approach, that we kind of view this day as a personal Yom Kippur on some level. So not only is it the practice to fast, but there's also a practice to recite vidui and ask mechila and things like that, and extra tefillos in general, under the assumption that it does have this aspect to it of a personal Yom Kippur. So that's one type of approach. That's one idea that you find that the Beis Shmuel quotes in the Maharam Mintz. There's another idea that's really very different that he also quotes. And that is that maybe we're concerned that if we let people eat and drink on the day of their wedding, so maybe they're going to go a little bit too far and they'll get drunk. So if they get drunk, it's not 100% clear what the problem is. So let's say they do get drunk. So it seems like if they get drunk, that's somehow going to interfere with the Kiddushin taking place, either because the chasm will not be of sound mind and body, it'll somehow throw a monkey wrench into the process. And therefore, in order to prevent that from happening, so we recommend that you don't eat or drink anything. Now, you might say that's quite a leap, to say just because you don't want to get drunk, so now I can't have anything. I can't have a pretzel because I'm afraid of getting drunk. Doesn't seem to really lead one into the other. So there's an interesting discussion about that. If you look in the Tshuva's Priyas Sada, I'll tell you exactly where to look. He has a whole discussion, a footnote there about how you get from one to the other. Because you find this elsewhere in Halakha, of course. At times when we're worried about drunkenness, so sometimes we don't just say don't drink wine, we ask for eating and drinking b'chlal. So why do we assume that eating and drinking is necessarily going to result in drunkenness? It's a fair question. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But that's apparently a presumption here. So that could be another reason, that maybe the idea is it's not so spiritual, it's not so inspiring, but it's about not getting drunk, and therefore to keep us from getting drunk, so we should stay away from apparently all food. Now there is another couple of theories.
I just wanted to suggest that perhaps the answers aren't necessarily exclusive from one another.
Ah, okay. Hasenberger Rebbe says a similar thing.
Maybe I'm onto it.
How do you want to say it?
Right, so I wanted to say that you can say that one goes to the other. In the first one, the one that we said that that it's a day of that it's a day of kedusha, that you can be forgiven for all your sins. So the only way that you can do that perhaps is that if you don't get drunk, right? So if you're not going to be able to, right? And the opposite way around also is that if somebody's drunk,
so you're saying it's not that we're concerned that drunkenness is going to interfere with the kedusha. The condition you'll be able to pull off, but to rise to the level of kapara,
right.
Maybe that's not going to happen.
That's perhaps, and also it's also a point of kedusha. I mean, kedusha itself is not. I mean, kedusha goes hand in hand with. I mean, it's all one aspect. Kedusha, kedushin, kedusha is also
mm-hmm.
one point. You can't experience kedusha except on Purim, obviously, but without being able to be with being inebriated. So I don't think that's what we're trying to.
Okay, could be. Maybe. Interesting. I'll discuss maybe a little later how the Klausenberger Rebbe has a similar kind of combination of the two. So, does it make a difference which way you hold? So, before going further, just to mention, there is also maybe a third opinion. There's a Rokeach. Rokeach was one of the Rishonim from Germany who has a take on it, which is a little similar but a little bit different also. And he says that we have this idea, we actually touched upon this a few weeks ago when we were talking about feeding your animals, that we have an idea, you have a mitzvah in front of you, a mitzvah of, let's say, shofar, lulav, something like that, so you're not supposed to eat before the mitzvah. So too, if you assume kedushin is a mitzvah, like the Rambam and Sefer Achinuch, Al Rishonim assume, so maybe when that mitzvah is on the table, so to speak, so it's not right for other things to be on the table. It's not right for you to be eating when you have this mitzvah in front of you, which is an interesting idea as well. We'll look at that a little bit more. So what difference does it make if you say one way or another? So one difference it makes has to do with the scheduling of things. So for example, let's say the wedding takes place in the middle of the day. So you've been fasting from the morning and the wedding takes place at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So should you keep on fasting after the chuppah in order to get a full day fasted? Or do we assume that the fast only goes up till the actual ceremony itself? Al-Achar HaBracha, as the post can say. So that presumably could depend on this issue. That if you believe that it's about getting a kapara, so then you probably want a normal fast, a whole day fast. While if we assume that it's about staying sober until you perform the kiddushin, so then maybe after the chuppah, it should be permitted to, it should be permissible to eat. You could possibly, I saw one sefer possibly, not necessarily follow that path, but I saw one sefer that said the fast is because of the kapara, but still the kapara doesn't require a full day halachic time. So it could be until the chuppah, even if it's the middle of the day, that's also considered a fast. I think I saw somewhere who also quoted an idea which he rejected, that some sfarim say maybe you shouldn't get married in the morning, because then you are mevatel tainus, and the assumption that it doesn't make sense to fast after the chuppah, but on the other hand, you don't want to lose the tainus. So to have a fast so early and have a wedding so early in the day that you knock out the whole concept, somebody thought maybe you shouldn't do that, and the sefer where I saw that quoted did not think that was really such a concern. The flip side of that would be, what happens if the chuppah is after shkiyah? What happens if it gets dark? It's now getting to be wintertime, gets dark, and let's say the chuppah is not for another hour or two. So do we assume that once it gets dark, so you finished your fast? Or should we assume that no, that you're trying to go up until the chuppah, and if the chuppah is not happening yet, so then you have to wait until that actually happens. The Ruvus Ephraim writes in his Chuvus that at his wedding, so I guess his wedding was later at night after it got dark already, so he said that his rabbi, Reb Moshe Feinstein, at the Tish, said to him, you know, no, eat something already, it's already dark, you're already yotze your time, so you can already eat something. So that would be the flip side of the issue. Is it about getting a tainus in, or is it about staying sober until the chuppah? So that would probably be affected by this question, what happens to the chuppah after the day is over? So this relates to what you asked before. So you'll say, hold on a second. If it's after shkia, so, well, what is the story here? Are you supposed to fast on the wedding day, or are you supposed to fast the day before the wedding? So if it's after shkia, so isn't that dividing the line between your fast and your wedding? So it means that the wedding is actually happening the next day. So maybe we should say that it should only start at Shkia and end when the chuppah happens. So how exactly does that work? So that highlights an important idea that I don't think there really is anything here that says that it actually has to be on the wedding day specifically. That the idea is that you want to approach the wedding day having done tshuva. So therefore, either you will fast on that day, or if it can't be that day, so let it be the day closest to it that is appropriate. So if it's not going to be technically the same day, halachically, that doesn't really matter. The point is that you should approach the chuppah having spent that day in fasting and shuvah. So even if technically it was the day before, that doesn't really affect the equation. Based on that, I wanted to suggest, which is different than the minhag as far as I know, but I still think it's a kedai suggestion. And I think the minhag is, we alluded to this before, that if somebody gets married on Rosh Chodesh, or gets married on some day which is not a fasting day, so then they assume they're off the hook. Okay, so there's it's not a day to fast, so boom, so you're patur from the fast. I would argue that, based on what we just said, that it makes sense to fast earlier day, since we've established it doesn't have to actually be the day itself, so then pick the closest day that is appropriate for fasting and fast then. And I'll say that b'didi ha'v'uvda, that I got married on the second day of Hanukkah, which was a Sunday, so I fasted the previous Thursday. That was the closest day that was appropriate for fasting. And there's a mile to that too, because there are people who sometimes feel that they can't approach the chuppah on an empty stomach, or they can't start dancing on an empty stomach, and especially the kallahs, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. It can be a very stressful consideration, so one could argue that maybe instead of taking the approach, well, I just can't handle the fast, maybe better to fast on the day earlier, or 2 days earlier, whatever it is, so that you can both accomplish the fast and deal with the wedding consciously. Hi.
According to the Shita, which says that it's to keep you sober before the chuppah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason for the vidui and that, all those?
So those are different minhagim, which don't necessarily have to work with together. And the fact is, the sources that say that there is a kapara, you know, those stand on their own. Right. So the fact
so
that
I mean, even if you're going to fast on an earlier day, you would still do the vidui the day of the chuppah.
Probably, although it wouldn't hurt to do it twice. You know, it wouldn't hurt to recognize both minhagim. So that being the case, so that's one approach as far as that's concerned. There is a discussion that you don't think is so relevant nowadays. Once upon a time, you learned the second parak of Kedushin, so you know there is a concept of Kedushin al yidei shliach. So we don't find that so much nowadays. Gemara itself wasn't so excited about it. Gemara says it's not a great way to do things for various reasons. But in theory, there is a concept of Kedushin al yidei shliach. So it might come back into popularity, because one trend that we've seen over the past few years is look for more and more opportunities to find kibbutim under the chuppah. And I think it was a Satmar Rebbe who commented, you know, it used to be that once upon a time the Sheva Brachas under the chuppah, so one rabbi would recite all the Sheva Brachas. No din, it has to be a different person reciting each one of the Sheva Brachas. But nowadays, we need to have more kibbutim, so we give out each one of the Sheva Brachas. So I think it was a Satmar Rebbe who commented, a Peshatter often quotes this, that the time will come when they'll have one person for bu and one person for reef. They'll divide up the syllables of the bracha, and they'll give out a separate syllable to each person. So too, we could see the time coming when people are going to say that we need more kibbutim, so we'll have a shlech l'kedushin as well. Mechabit somebody with shlechus l'kedushin. So if you have a shlech l'kedushin, so the prima gadim has a safek, and others have a safek as well, that maybe we should say that the shlech should fast. So who should fast? Maybe the chassan should fast, shouldn't fast, shlech should fast, shouldn't fast, both should fast, who should fast? So it would seem that it should depend on this issue. That if you believe that the idea is that it's a personal Yom Kippur, and because of your kapara that you're fasting, so who has the kapara? Presumably the chassan has the kapara. So then even if he's at home taking a nap, and the shliach is somewhere else getting married for him, presumably he should be fasting wherever he is. While if the idea is that you need to remain of sound mind and body so that you can carry off the Kedushin properly, so then presumably it's whoever is doing the act of Kedushin that has to worry about that. So even if it's a Shliach, maybe he should have to fast. So it's interesting, if you look at the Kedushas Levi in this week's Parsha, this is the connection that we were holding secret until now. So Eliezer, on his mission to find a wife for Yitzchak, so when he's offered food, so the future in-laws say, here's some food, we want to host you. So he says, I'm not going to eat until I say my piece. So why does he refuse to eat? So the Kedushas Levi explains that he doesn't want to eat because he was a shliach l'kedushin, and he was fasting. So he said, I'm not going to eat until after the chuppah, I'm not going to eat until after I do what I'm here to do. So first of all, it's interesting because it means that Eliezer was an Ashkenazi. Because not everybody has this minig, but apparently Eliezer had this minig, and he was adhering to this idea. But the idea is controversial somewhat. First of all, it's an interesting question. Was he really a shliach l'kedushin? It's not 100% clear from the Torah that that's the case. And there are svarim, especially the svarim that are aimed toward this kind of discussion, you know, trying to figure out, is this really true? Was Eliezer really a shliach l'kedushin, or was he a shatkin? He was there on a mission to find the kala, and then Yitzchak did the kedushin without a shliach. So that's a discussion of itself. But I noticed that Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, in his Minchas Asher, so he wanted to taina against the Kedushas Levi. He says, there's a raya from Chumash that the Kedushas Levi is wrong. What's the raya? That we see that Eliezer did eat that day, or at least he did drink, because he drank water. So it says Beferish in the Torah that he drank water that day. So therefore he was not fasting. He had some other reason for not taking their food, but he wasn't fasting, so it's against the Kedushas Levi. So as you know, the Kedushas Levi was always there to defend the Klal Yisrael. That was his thing. Anytime the Jews were accused of anything, the Kedushas Levi was always defending them. So I think it's only appropriate we should try to defend the Kedushas Levi. I think it's possible that he's right. I mean, whether the whole situation was true or not is a separate question, but from the Lamda's perspective, it works. Because what is the Kedushas Levi saying? So Kedushas Levi is assuming that Eliezer was obligated to fast as the Shliach LeKedusha. So as we mentioned, that's a suffix in Poskim whether or not a Shliach is obligated to fast. Why would we say he's obligated to fast? So we just said before that if it's about Kapara, so he shouldn't have to fast. But if it's about not getting drunk, so then he should have to fast. So the assumption that he should fast is based on the idea that the concern is drunkenness. So based on that assumption, that the idea is drunkenness, so some posts can write, the Aruch HaShulchan and others, that if you feel you really can't handle the fast, so it's not so terrible if you want to eat very light food. If you want to eat very sparingly, where there's really no concern that it's going to get out of control, so because it's sad that that's what the fast is about, so then B'Shas HaTzarech can be made like that. So then it makes sense. So here the whole reason Eliezer is going to fast is because he's afraid of getting drunk. So if he's afraid of getting drunk, you're allowed to drink water. Water is not going to intoxicate you. So therefore the fact that he drank water works out very well. She taught us that he was a Shneir Chayiv fast, so it's also not so terrible to drink water. So that's probably a decent defense, at least from the perspective of Lumdus, from the Kedushas Levi's perspective. What was actually true in practice, I don't know, but at least in Lumdus wise, it could probably hold up. There is a discussion the Magen Avraham has that if somebody gets married between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, you still should fast. And Mat Ephraim, the classic sefer, comments on the Lachos of Elul and Tishrei. So he says, but Pshas HaTzorech, if there's a real need not to, so then it could be Mekel. So what's the issue there? So Lachar is totally on the same thing. I think Alpha Mata maybe explains this in the commentary in Mat Ephraim, that it should be the same issue probably, that if the idea is that you're afraid of getting drunk, so then who cares what time of year it is between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, it doesn't make a difference. But if the idea is that it's a personal Yom Kippur, so then maybe if you had the real Yom Kippur a day or two before, so then maybe there's more grounds to be makel, especially on the day after Yom Kippur. Some point out, there's the Gemara Maseches Krisus, which says that Bava ben Buta used to bring an Ashram Tali every day of his life. Because he said, who knows, maybe I did something wrong, so I'll bring a carbon every day of my life. Except Motzei Yom Kippur. Motzei Yom Kippur, he said, give me some time, man. I gotta, probably Motzei Yom Kippur, I'm still clean. Every other day of the year, who knows? So based on that Gemara, there's those who want to say that maybe, especially the day after Yom Kippur, if you get married then there's more grounds to be makel on the fast, if you assume that it's about Kapara. So there is there's also a discussion as far as I have about you have to brush your teeth. And this tinnitus on the stomach, according to both studies, you can brush your teeth. Certainly, if you've got drunkenness, I don't know what kind of toothpaste you use, probably it's not an issue. But even if you assume it's a tinnitus for kapara, it's still a tinnitus yachid. Someone should be okay. But there is also an extensive discussion, which is, as we'll see, hyper complicated. So we'll just highlight some of the issues and then move on. But it's interesting, it should be hyper simple because it's beferish in the Ramah. The Ramah, who tells us about this minig, so he says the minig is for the chasen and the kala to fast. Nonetheless, in the later svarim, so they had a whole din starting from scratch, should the kala fast? Can we assume it's just a din in the chasen, or is it a din in the kala also? So that becomes hyper complicated, because if you think about it, every tzad that you could have, there's a couple of study to say. If you want to assume that it's mishum kapara, so then, okay, so let's try to figure out, is the kapara just for the chasen, or is it for the kala also? So, okay, good question. So let's try to figure out what's the kapara about. If the kapara is about taking on responsibility, maybe it's one thing. If it's about becoming a full whole person, then for sure it should apply. If it's about doing a mitzvah, then we have to figure out is there a mitzvah on the kala also, which we'll come back to in a second. So this flowchart has many different branches. Because then if you want to say that it's about not getting drunk, so then we have to figure out, so what is it that we want to prevent when we say don't get drunk? So is it that we're afraid Kedushin is not going to be Chal? So then we have to figure out, so what does the Isha have to do in terms of Kedushin? There's that famous Ran in Nedarim, which seems to suggest she doesn't really have to do anything. It's really all the Maisa of the Chasin. So then you have to figure out, is there a Maisa that she has to do also that she has to be sober for? What if she was drunk? What if she's completely drunk at the time? So maybe you could argue that that's a problem, because maybe even if she doesn't really have to do anything, but she still has to be willing, and maybe she can't be willing if she's completely drunk. So each side of the discussion could branch out into maybe yes, maybe no. This is a very complicated flowchart. And let's say you want to say the Rokeach. So the Rokeach says if you have a mitzvah to do, so you should indeed. So is she doing a mitzvah? So that's also a question. Most of the Rishonim assume that the mitzvah of Kiddushin is only on the man, that the woman doesn't have a mitzvah of Kiddushin. However, the Ran says in the beginning of the second paragraph of Kiddushin that she is part of the mitzvah because she is clearly a vital part, and it's a misayeya, so it makes it possible. So therefore, talked about misayeya a little bit before, so this is a positive misayeya, so then maybe we do give her a status like she's doing the mitzvah. So this is, even though it should be simple because the Ramah already said, but it became a complicated discussion later on. Every possibility that you want to have in this issue could branch off into three or four ways of looking at it. So Lamaisa, because there is what to argue about it, so if you have a situation where, let's say, the Kala doesn't feel strong enough to fast, she feels she'll get sick, something like that. So the poskim who talk about this issue are a little bit more ready to be makel for the Kala than the Chasen, because the Kali, you could build more of a case that there's more of a Safik, obviously, minik to begin with, so you know we're not going to necessarily be so machmer on the minik, but whatever the calculation is you find some discussions in poskim where they're a little more ready concerning the Kala, because there is this room to question whether or not it really is applicable to her in the same way as it is to the Chasim. Does someone have any answer? So, yeah.
If the source is the Ramah, mm-hmm. How can you say it doesn't apply to the Kala? He says both, no?
Right, that's why I said it should be simple. But nonetheless, it was still analyzed by the later post.
No, so can't we figure out the answer? We can.
Well, you know, because you figure out the psak from the Ramah, but
right.
You figure out why, as we see.
So
no,
anything that doesn't apply to a woman, that's not the reason.
Except that we see each reason you could make a case that it should apply. That's why it's such a hyper-complicated question. Because each one of these two or three reasons that we want to talk about, each one I can make a case in both directions. So that's why it gets a little bit complex. Maybe mention one or two other issues. So there is also a question which is interesting, that if a person wants to fast, let's say a person decides that he wants to have a personal fast. So the Gemara says in Masechet Tainis that you have to do it on purpose. If you want your fast to be meaningful, so you can't on a winter day oversleep in the morning and run off without breakfast. And then you have a meeting during lunch, and then you realize it's 2 o'clock, and it'll be Shkia pretty soon, and I haven't had a chance to eat anything. So I'll just hold out a little bit longer, and I'll chapatinus, and I'll get credit for my tzidkus here. So the Gemara said it doesn't work that way. And the fast has to be intentional. That you have to decide the day before, by mincha time, you have to make a declaration that you will be fasting the next day, and it should count for something. Otherwise, you don't get any credit, whatever that means. So there is a discussion. This would only apply clearly to a personal fast. No one says you have to be makabel shvasu b'tamah. Shvasu b'tamah is on the calendar, so you don't have to have a personal kabbalah for that. So how exactly does this fit in? So on the one hand, if it's a tshuva for kapara, so then it makes sense that you should be makabel it like every other fast day. While if it's about getting drunk, so then you don't need a kabbalah for that. That's a practical type of issue. You're just trying to stay sober, so you don't have to officially, formally declare your intention to stay sober. According to the first diet, you could also say that even though it's not purely speaking calendaric, but at the same time, if you're part of the community that has a minhag to do this, so then maybe you could argue that for that reason you should be exempt from having to make a kabbalah because the standing minhag maybe serves the kabbalah. So that's an interesting din to have. And do we assume that if there's a accepted minhag for you to fast on that day, then that itself replaces the obligation for Kabbalah. Of course, if you're going to do it like I did, like I was discussing before, that's not actually the day of the chuppah, it's some time beforehand. So that's a little bit more of a chiddush. It would seem that would really need a Kabbalah, because first of all, it's not going to be mishum drunkenness, because it's a few days before, so it's only mishum kapara, and it probably really should require a Kabbalah under those circumstances. There is a little bit of discussion. The Klausenberger Rebbe has a tshuva about maybe you should say the same thing should apply the day of the get. He quotes from the Be'er Heitiv that there is such a practice of fasting on the day of the get, but the practice probably applies to the dayanim, not to the husband and the wife. So it's probably not a comparable concept. But as I alluded to earlier, so in that tshuva or in a different tshuva, the Klausenberger Rebbe and his tshuva Divrei Yatziv, so he suggests that maybe the ideas do come together. That if you think about it, so you find also when it comes to Yom Kippur, So Erev and Kippur, you're supposed to say Vidui. And we recommend, even though this is a whole story in the Rishonim, because it's less than perfect to do it this way, but nonetheless, we're told that we should do it, do the Vidui before the Suda, before Yom Kippur. So the concern, either the concern is that Chas v'Shalom, somebody's going to choke and you're not going to be able to recite the Vidui beforehand, or that maybe we're worried that you're going to get out of control and you're going to not be in the proper mindset to say Vidui. So he notes there, isn't that so strange? You think that here, Erev and Kippur, you're all ready to Yom HaGadol Ba'Anora, you're going to get drunk right before Yom Kippur? It's the same kind of concern that you find here on the wedding day that also doesn't seem so likely. As we said before, why is it the assumption just because you're going to have a little bit of food, you have some pretzels, have some water, you're going to get drunk, doesn't seem to follow. He says that the whole nature of the Kedusha of these days, which is a little bit similar to what you're saying, is that it creates a equal but opposite Yetzirah, that the higher the level of the Kedusha, so the higher the temptation is to kind of counter it. So therefore, even every other day of the year, you can get through dinner, you're not going to get drunk. But Erev and Kippur, there's this build-up of Kedusha, which has this opposite reaction, so to speak, so therefore we have to be even more careful with letting ourselves go in the context of the Suda. And so too on the wedding day, maybe any other day, you could eat a little bit, you're not going to get drunk. On the wedding day, everything is notched up, and therefore there becomes this Zahiris, which doesn't necessarily apply. So, and we'll stop there. So just to quickly chazer what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there is a minig, a widespread minig that the Rama quotes to fast on the day of the wedding. It's widespread, but not totally. It's primarily an Ashkenazic minig, as Rav Avadya Yosef points out, and others record places where they don't have this minig. And then we talked about the question about why is it? Why do we have this practice? And we saw that the Beis Shmuel, the Magen Avraham, quote from the Maharam Mincy, two reasons. Either that it's because the person Yom Kippur, as we find from Esav, that Esav's wife is called Machlas, even though her name is Basmas, in order to show that you got Mechilas Avonos, and therefore maybe it's a person Yom Kippur. So we discussed the question, is it automatic or is it an opportunity for tshuva? We mentioned how some Sfarim talk about the question of why do we have to say that somebody who said her Eimut Kedeshnusli Amanasha Ani Tzadik, that that's only going to be a valid Kedushin if he thinks of tshuva. Maybe automatically it should work, definitely, not even as a suffix because of the Kapar Savonus. So we talk about a little bit some of the possibilities, how to make those two ideas work together. But probably the most straightforward way is to say that it's not automatic, to say that it's an opportunity, and that's why you fast instead of celebrating, because you have to step up to the plate and do tshuva in order for it to work. And then we discuss some of the theories as to why there should be, in general, this Kapara. Is it because you're becoming a full person, or taking on extra responsibility, or you're taking on protection? Whatever it is, all of these reasons that are offered in this farm as to why there is this kapara, this mechila, and then we discuss some of those angles. And then another side, why this is there, is that maybe it's not about the kapara, but it's about drunkenness, that we're afraid you're going to get drunk, and that will somehow cause a problem. Not 100% clear what the problem is. Somehow it will interfere with the kedushin taking place the way it should. And there's also the view of the rekeach, that it's because you have a mitzvah on your plate, so you shouldn't eat before the mitzvah. And then we talked about how it might affect things. So what if the wedding is during the day? Do you keep fasting afterwards? What if the wedding is after dark? Do you still have to fast until the chuppah? Can you stop when it gets dark? And that prompted the discussion, the fact that in that case it would really be a different day, the fast and the wedding. And we discussed that's probably not such a problem, that the idea is if you fast close to the wedding, we'll have davka that it has to actually be the wedding day. And therefore we recommended against the prevailing minig that if you get married on a day that's not a fasting day, so you should still fast at the closest possible day to the wedding. And then we discussed as well the question of what happens if you get married a shliach, which who knows, might come back into vogue. So that was a suffix in the Primagadim, and that should depend on these issues. The kapara only applies to the chasen, but the sound mind of body is required of the shliach, and that the Kedushas Levi says in this week's parasha that that's what happened, that Eliezer refused food until he finished doing what he had to do because he was a shliach Kedushin who was fasting. So I mentioned that Rav Asher Weiss questions this because it says in the Torah that he drank water, and then we tried to defend the Kedushas Levi by saying the only reason he should fast if he's assuming that it's Mishum drunkenness, and if it's Mishum drunkenness, the Archa Shulchan and others say you're allowed to drink water, and therefore the water that he drank does not contradict the idea that maybe he was fasting. And then we talked about this notion that the Magen Avraham and the Matan Chaim talk about fasting even between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Discuss why is that a question, because maybe if it's Mishum Kapara, so maybe you're close enough to Yom Kippur, it's not really necessary, and that's why there is a day that you can make Ol B'Shas HaTzarech if that's the case. And especially the day after Yom Kippur, the Gemara says, Bav Ben Buta, that was the one day he wouldn't bring a carbon, because he assumed at least that one day he's probably clean, and it's only an issue every other day. And then we talked also about the question of brushing your teeth, and we talked also about the question of women, that the Kala, that the Ramah seems to apply to both, so that should really be the end of the story. But the latest farm do analyze the question of whether it really is equally applicable to the Kala, and we mentioned it's kind of hyper-complicated that every tzad in this discussion breaks down into a couple of studs about whether it applies to women. Probably every possibility you can make an equal case for both, whether the kapara applies to women, whether the mitzvah applies to women, whether the need for sobriety applies to women. Each one of those has its own discussion. And then we talked about the question of the Kabbalah. Is there a need, like the Gemara says, when you take on a personal fast to be makabel the day before? So it should probably depend. If it's about drunkenness, that's just a practical need. There's no issue of a Kabbalah. But if it's a personal tainus for kapara, so then presumably it should. Unless you want to say that maybe not, that the minig that says that it's the wedding day is what you do, maybe that should act in place of a Kabbalah. I mean, which mentioned the Klausenberger Rebbe commenting that maybe it should apply to the day of the get, and that there is such a discussion in the Berheitev, but presumably only talking about Dayanim, so it's probably not really relevant. And just how he mentioned how those two ideas combine, the two ideas we're talking about, that just like on Erev and Kippur, that we see that you should do the Bidui before the meal, because we're afraid, among other things, that maybe you'll get drunk. It sounds like such a crazy thing to think about. What are the chances Erev and Kippur you're going to get drunk? So he says, Hagufa, that's the issue, that the buildup of Kedusha creates this parallel Yetzirah, so there becomes a greater need to be careful, and so too on the day of the wedding, the same thing applies. And so that is, as you were suggesting, a combination approach, that because of the Kapara angle to Erev and Kippur, and the comparison that it has to the day of the wedding, therefore, doubt on that day, any amount of food is scarier in terms of drunkenness than on any other day, and that's how these two ideas possibly combine. Okay, we'll stop there. So again, can I ask officially be the notifier that next Wednesday night is the 9th of the year?